Born and raised in Kansas City, he talks about what we talk about. The Chiefs.
If you can give Patrick Mahomes the ball right now before halftime, you can swing the momentum completely in your advantage.
The weather.
It's 60 degrees. I'm incredibly happy.
And like a great jazz trumpeter, he can hit the high notes.
It's only Tuesday.
All the wrong reasons?
Drew Lock has been 3-1. Pretty good. Got the Denver Broncos thinking about the future.
He's Nate Taylor of The Athletic.
What do you think about this?
On the program.
You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It is time to talk to our man, Nate Taylor, from The Athletic. We'll talk some Chiefs football. He's brought to you by Corona, Corona Light, Corona Premier. Also, that Corona Hard Seltzer. Got that New Year's resolution to drop some pounds. No sugars, no carbs. That's the Corona Hard Seltzer. Great flavor without any of the carbs and sugars that will slow you down. Look for it wherever you buy your Corona. I can tell you that the Corona Premieres went down a little bit faster in the second half. I'm just saying. I don't know why, but was it a stress relief? I don't know. Could have been. But that's how it worked for me. Let's talk to Nate Taylor. He was in the stadium for the game. Welcome to our T-Mobile guest line, Nate. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, and it would have been it would have been beneficial maybe to some degree if I had a similar beverage with me in the press box trying to put – it all together as to how chaotic that last hour of the game was.
You know, the press boxes used to have a bar in them, right? Like, I actually think the bar might have still been there at Kauffman Stadium when I got into this business in 1994. They might have still. Curtis, do you remember the bar in the dining, the old dining area for the Royals?
Yes.
Was it still there?
I got there in 96. I think it was gone. I think you just had the food.
I think at 94.
At that point, when you walk in, the drinks were on the left and the food was on the right. I don't remember there being a bar there in 96, but you had two years on me.
I think there might have been. I think it was there.
I remember hearing about it, so it was definitely there.
Anyway, just another thing that these damn sports teams have taken from us, Nate, the ability to get zooted during the game when you're stressed out, right? Like, what the hell's going on here, you know?
Yeah.
Savages. But seriously, let's start with the toe. I began to panic with what appeared to be a toe injury. He says that Andy Reid said today the toe is fine.
Right.
I don't buy that at all. I think it looked like classic turf toe if it happened on the play that the television broadcast thinks it happened. It's, you know, like a kind of a partial dislocation of the toe, and those don't go away quick.
No, they don't, and it's why I wanted to ask Andy earlier today, because he was laboring, right? I mean, it was pretty clear midway through the second quarter, okay, like he can still scramble, but it's like – desperation instead of like using it to your advantage. And you know, Mahomes played excellent up until his, you know, concussion injury. He is in the concussion protocol. It's going to take several days for him to get through it all, so we should probably mention that towards the top. But I mean, yeah, like it's interesting to know. And I understand Andy Reid's line of thinking here, despite I know a lot of fans being like, but a quarterback sneak, you know, it's still an option. It is fascinating to me, Saran, as to, you know, in a short yardage situation, to continue to run an option play when your quarterback has a toe injury and you're exposing him to, you know, fast, fierce linebackers. When you don't necessarily have to. So the Chiefs, you know, I thought had a pretty impressive game plan from an offensive standpoint, but the one sort of short-sightedness in all of this is that they exposed Mahomes a little bit too much. And, you know, that's the risk-reward that you sort of take when you know you're playing an elimination, you know,
right,
playoff game. But even if he – best case scenario is that he does something football related on Thursday or Friday. But you also have to keep in mind as to where his toe is involved in that. with the idea that, like, he's still going to need to have treatment on that just as much as he's going to need to clear each step of the five-step NFL protocol process and then be cleared by an independent neurologist.
All right, let's a couple of things. A lot of ground to cover there. Number one, I tried to get from Andy Reid today. In fact, let's hear it. Jed, give me we'll let everybody hear it. I said, look, is there a point where, you know, you're not going to play him, right?
Right.
Let's see. Number seven, Jed. I said, look, you know, basically getting at, does he have to practice to play? I said, look,
right.
I know, you know, do you have a spot in your head, Andy, where, okay, if he's not back by this point, I know you're not going to make it public, but, you know, if he's not back by a certain point in the week where you would in your head, although not announcing it, determine that Mahomes won't play.
Well, I need to say it publicly.
Well, I know you wouldn't.
but listen, I'll have to evaluate that as we go forward. You know, let's just see how this whole thing rolls.
I mean, he's not going anywhere near it, right?
Nope.
Which I get. He wants Buffalo prepping both ways. You know, I think they'll – and if you're Buffalo, you prep for Mahomes, and then you react to, all right, now take this out, take this out, take this out, because Henny can't make those throws. So I think they'll prep for Mahomes either way. But he's going to play the cards close to the vest, Nate. What I believe is we just watched the Cleveland Browns go beat the Steelers and win a game where large parts of the team were not even at practice. So, listen, let the – great American philosopher Allen Iverson be our guide. We're talking about practice.
Yes.
And as a guy who's coaches, you know, has coached at the highest level, fifth grade girls basketball, that's my highest level. Practice does matter. I mean, I'm not trying to be facetious. It does matter. You can't miss all the practices, but you can miss some of the practices. And if anybody can miss some of the practices, it's Patrick Mahomes, right?
Yes, I tend to agree with you. And again, I said best case scenario, Patrick Mahomes does something on Thursday or Friday, whether that's.
But if he didn't get cleared till Sunday morning, would you have a problem with him starting?
And that's what I was going to lead to, right? I mean, if he doesn't do anything on Thursday and Friday, if you just want him to be rested and evaluated and then reevaluated and what's his baseline and okay, he's cleared to go, if it happens Thursday morning, or excuse me, Sunday morning, he's going to play. I mean, Andy Reid understands that the best path towards winning is with that guy. I think they showed against the Cleveland Browns, their timing was pretty sharp despite him not playing in an actual football setting, you know, full-on speed with an opponent on the field for over 3 weeks, and they still executed at a very high level. So if he does nothing – other than just get cleared to play Sunday against the Buffalo Bills, he will play just because you can obviously do more with Andy Reid, and you have to trust that what he's shown you over the course of the season leads you to feel like, you know, Mahomes is going to be close to what he normally is. Now, I always like to remind people, a concussion, you know, it has a ton of ramifications to you. Some guys come back quicker than others. This obviously relates to the protocol as a whole. But then you come back onto the field and you have to play, and it's, you know, the speed of the game. And as Andy likes to tell us all the time, you know, the speed of the wild card round goes up more with the speed of the divisional round, and it gets really high in the championship and Super Bowl. So I assume Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy are going to start to create a game plan where they know Mahomes can feel comfortable getting into a rhythm if he does play, and then you sort of expand from that as the game moves along, the more he sort of shows you that he's in a rhythm if he is actually out there and through, you know, being cleared of the protocol.
Are we watching the dawn of the usage of the fourth down? It was necessitated. It was in an emergency situation. Cleveland converted 3 of 3. The Chiefs converted 2 of 2. Overall in this game, 5 of 5, which means that Cleveland 6 of 13 on third down is really 9 of 13 as far as, because then they converted 3 of the ones they didn't convert on third, on fourth. And the Chiefs 5 of 10 on third down is really 7 of 10 when they converted their 2 fourth downs. I didn't like Cleveland converting them, but I was like, here it is, guys. Like, this is what it takes. Here it is. And I give Stefanski credit, although it's not as much. You know, I'm like, he was in a spot where even if he didn't get it, he wasn't going to be ridiculed, right? He wasn't
right.
Going to be, you know, you know, like, oh, you idiot, you moron. But I do think that, you know, more and more we're seeing coaches become comfortable going for it on fourth down.
I just wish Stefanski kind of went for it just a little bit more. I agree that, especially when you play against the Chiefs and Mahomes is fully healthy, you have to go breakneck like there's no tomorrow, because there literally isn't, and be as aggressive as you can with fourth down and use that time during the week to sort of prepare your players for these type of scenarios and the type of plays that you're going to need to execute, because usually you'd like to show a little wrinkle or a little something differently on fourth down, unless you're the Chiefs and you have Tyreek Hill and you can literally run the same play to beat the Miami Dolphins, to beat the Cleveland Browns, which tells you more about the brilliance of the play call and the player in Tyreek Hill.
And the talent, yeah.
Yeah, getting wide open.
What Tyreek Hill is, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The play is beautiful just because you have to honor Kelce, who is right next to Tyreek Hill, and so you can't play super tight bump and run, even if it is fourth and one, because if you do that, then they have an ability to sort of counter with these sort of rub routes to get somebody open in man coverage. So you have to play off slightly, but that's even too much space for Tyreek Hill because, again, he's the fastest player in the league. And so it's a great combination of the play call and player executing at a high level, no matter who the quarterback is, honestly. And Chad Henne did a good job to recognize, hey, I can do that too, given the limited amount of reps I've had with the ones or the twos most notably. So if you're Cleveland, or now we move it to Buffalo – I really wasn't impressed with Buffalo's offense on Saturday. Like, they had one good drive. They need to be prepared to get points as soon as possible because they don't want to be in a situation where Cleveland was in, where I thought Turin, Kevin Stefanski was going to say, like, oh, we won the toss, cool, let me have the ball, let me start to establish a tempo, let me give my guys confidence. Instead, they were down 14-3 in a blink of an eye. And from that moment on, you're basically playing catch-up the whole time. So Andy Reid is still advanced on fourth down, comparable to his peers. And that is not
where did you think success. You said you wanted Stefanski to go for it more. Was there a play that you thought that he punted, that you thought he should have gone for it?
I mean, so here's the problem. You're down 6-0 immediately, right? Like, they move the ball down the field. They get backed up on third down. You kick a field goal. You're like, fine. But at the same time, I'm kind of like,
Wait a minute. Just to be clear, it was 4th and 18.
Yeah.
When they kicked their field goal.
Yeah. So you take the points and you're like, that's fine. Yeah, whatever. Like, I know they kind of got screwed with the fumble in the end zone. The rule's a rule. We have to accept it for what it is. It does benefit the Chiefs, of course. They could have been slightly more aggressive in the second half, and I think they waited a little too late because it took them 18 plays to get down the field to score their last touchdown. And within knowing that, they went forward on 4th and inches to convert the first time on their last drive. But with even 4th and 9, part of me was like, I would tend to go for it here. Like, I the situations weren't great for Stefanski, but I do feel like you kind of have to beat the Chiefs on the scoreboard and on fourth down conversions, whether that's success rate or just quantity for that matter.
See, I actually think Stefanski may have called a near perfect game, right? Because, I was a little critical on that he wouldn't commit to me when I asked him on the interview, does Baker Mayfield have to play a great game for you to win? I think the answer was absolutely yes. And
right.
I think he actually did. Right. I think one thing that's clear, and I was talking to Eric Eager about this, Cleveland's weapons suck. Okay. Like, Jarvis Landry is a really good chain mover, but he strikes no fear. Higgins strikes more fear.
Mm-hmm.
Peoples Jones can at least run that go route on the side. which he may or may not have been in bounds. By the way, when I hear all the Browns fans freak out about the helmet to helmet thing on that play, well, how about the fact that I'm not sure Hopper caught the ball on the fourth down, because the ball did hit the ground, and so you can make a case that the ball moves a little bit in his hand, and so therefore, since he didn't have his hand under it, therefore it's not a completed pass. I still haven't seen the angle that definitively proves that Peoples-Jones had 2 feet in on the go route on the sideline. You know, there were plenty of calls that went their way, so I hate the whining from Cleveland. But I thought Stefanski kept his team in the game. And let's keep in mind, if he reaches the ball out just a little bit further before it gets knocked away, it's a touchdown, they win. Or are winning 24-22 late.
Yeah, the complexion of the game completely changes, because you go from 16 to 10, and I'm not sure Patrick Mahomes has enough time to lead the team down the field. You know, it's hard to say whether they get a field goal out of that. Now, clearly they did, and it was 19-3, and it seemed like, you know, we were headed toward a comfortable blowout. You know, Mayfield made one mistake, and I would like to give a lot of credit to Steve Spagnuolo, because it was clear that the Chiefs understood that, hey, the Steelers sucked every time the Browns wanted to run a screen pass. Hey, let's be sound and let's be disciplined when they run the screen game. They only got beat on the first one, which was a different sort of personnel packages. But they kept Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, you know, really ineffective, because I would tell you, Seren, outside of like Austin Hooper in the red zone and like you mentioned Landry under the chain, their best wide receivers are their running backs. So if their running backs can't get open, then yeah, they have legitimate problems. And, you know, they only used one time with, I think, Kareem really, you know, being sort of that slot receiver going up against Dan Sorensen. I thought that matchup could have been maybe explored a little bit more, just to see who could win that one-on-one matchup. But, you know, Stefanski worked with what he had. I don't know.
I hear what you're saying, but I actually think the Chiefs defense had a day.
They did.
Right? They were pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And Stefanski, I think the thing I kept saying, I said, listen, if Patrick Mahomes plays in this game, they can't lose. Well, he played, you know, a little more than half of it. And that opened the door. And I think he did a pretty good job, and Baker Mayfield did. You weren't going to win. He kept talking about the turnovers in that Zoom, because he knew he wasn't going to win unless he was plus in the turnover department.
Correct.
And you know, to his credit, he didn't get knocked out. He stayed in the fight. And so he had a puncher's chance at the end. And I think that's pretty good, because I think the Chiefs are way better than the Browns. Like, I think the fact that he hung around, I think if Patrick Mahomes doesn't go down, this game ends 32-17, 36-17. Like, and I think that's the real difference between these two teams. So, you know, the door opened when Mahomes went out, and for Stefanski to keep it to five and to be a stop from his defense away from having a chance to win it, I think that's about all you could ask for.
Yeah. Here's one more thing that I would say. When Mahomes goes out, I would have told the coaching staff, you're already in four-down territory from this day forth. Like, it's the third quarter, you're already down. Like, start thinking about every play call as, you know, four down territory, which they really kind of didn't do until they had their last touchdown drive. And then secondly, if you are going to play in this sort of, you know, manner, you got to preserve your timeouts. And I think that was one thing where,
yeah,
it's like, you want to get the right call. I understand that, but like, you're down and like, you're going to need possessions and you're going to need, you know, the clock is obviously your enemy. So save, you know, they used two timeouts in a very cavalier manner. And obviously it ended up hurting them, because, you know, in some ways it gives Chiefs and the Chad Henne an advantage, because as long as they keep the clock running, it makes, you know, it makes them have to do less thinking. And the, you know, and then they obviously got the right call and went for the right decision to go for it, because they knew they had an experienced quarterback who wasn't, you know, if the pass wasn't there, he was either going to take a sack and keep the clock running, or they were going to complete the pass to Hill and it was going to be the game over. If you have timeouts, that equation changes quite differently.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point, because you cannot challenge a call and be wrong in that situation.
Not there. Yeah, that's true. You know, so true.
You can't. And it wasn't even close. Like, you know, I know the explanation that Tony Romo said, oh, the coaches are there, and you see it weird. You see him bobbling the ball, but you don't really see the whole play, but you assume. I get it, but you've got to have somebody in the booth that's looking at the video before you throw that challenge out there. And so that was a really bad one and cost them big time in this game. All right, let's take a break. More with Nate Taylor from The Athletic. We're talking Chiefs football here on the program.
The program with Soren Petro
has spoken to a woman he didn't work with in the last decade.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the good sense, end of the hour answer. How many quarterbacks taken number one overall have faced the team that drafted them in the postseason?
Oof. I wonder if Plunkett maybe faced the Patriots once.
He did not.
Okay. Number one overall. Did that happen or something?
It happened yesterday.
Mayfield, no. Number one overall, just in the first round or number 1-1?
No, well, number one overall pick in the draft quarterback facing their team in the postseason. It happened late yesterday. Threw a touchdown pass.
Oh, Jameis Winston.
Yeah. When he came off the bench, he was the second. There was one other.
Huh. Did Peyton Manning beat the Colts, maybe?
Peyton Manning played the Colts in 2014. He did not win. That was Andrew Luck took the Colts to Indy and fell behind early and went on to win. So just Jameis Winston and Peyton Manning. In fact, you mentioned Plunkett. Now, Winston is one of four quarterbacks, number one overall. And this is not counting John Elway and Eli Manning. I caught a lot of flack of that. They didn't ever played for the teams that drafted. I don't count them.
Right, correct.
Winston, one of four quarterbacks, taken number one overall, to throw their first postseason TD for a team that didn't draft them. Plunkett is one you named. He threw his first for Oakland. There are Winston. Two others.
So 1-1 threw his first playoff to Drew Bledsoe?
Mm-mm.
Oh, no, of course he'd been there with the Pats. The hell, he went to the Super Bowl. That was stupid. Carson Palmer?
Mm-mm.
He threw one for the Bengals?
Mm-hmm.
Then he got hurt on that play, I believe.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
1-1 through their first touchdown pass for somebody else, and it's Winston, it's Plunkett.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Touchdown pass.
Did Alex – I remember the run with Alex Smith with San Francisco.
He threw one for San Francisco.
Yeah.
He threw the game winner to Vernon Davis.
That's right.
Against the Saints.
Wow, that's interesting. Steve Young wouldn't count on that, right?
Nope.
Because he was a dispersal draft pick, or would he go 1-1?
Yeah, I wouldn't have counted him. Yeah, the supplemental draft, yeah.
Yeah. Vinny Testaverde?
Vinny Testaverde threw his first touchdown pass for Cleveland.
Okay.
94. One more.
Okay, so one more?
Yep.
Ooh. 1-1. Can you give me two decades? Narrow it down to two decades.
90s on the draft and the touchdown.
Oh, so that's one decade, you know. So he's a 90s 1-1.
Barely.
So he's 99.
Or?
Or he was 90. Let's see, 89, 90. Who's going 1-1 in 90? Jeff George.
Oh, taken God. Number one by the Colts through
what
his first postseason touchdown pass against the Packers in the 1995 wild card game.
For the Falcons, right?
Or for the Falcons, against the Packers, yeah.
You were all over that one, Petra. You just crushed that, by the way.
I got Plunkett.
Yeah.
I knew that one. I got that's one most
pretty
people
good.
Wouldn't get. Most people don't know who the hell drafted Plunkett. Don't know that he was number one overall after winning the Heisman and then was a dog with fleas for two organizations, the Patriots and the Niners, and then resurrected with the Raiders. So Plunkett, Jeff George, Jameis Winston, and who was the other one?
Vinny.
And Vinny. Oh, wow. What a crew. What a crew. I love it. Good Sense, what we were playing for. You can go to goodsensesubs.com, put your order in right now. The app, that's how I like to do it. Easiest way, couple of clicks. You can save your favorites. We've got the whole family order saved in there, my individual order saved in there. Literally, like, I'm four or five clips away from having Good Sense right now. I could do it right now if I wanted to. And don't forget that loyalty club, 10% back every time when you go to Good Sense. Nate Taylor's with us from The Athletic, brought to you by our friends at Corona. Tell me, Nate, what do you think of the way this defense is playing? They held Cleveland to 17 points. I know they're not the most dynamic offense left in this thing, but that's still an accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get down to, first of all, the left tackle was the weakest link. He was ranked 22nd amongst tackles in the NFL. He was the weakest link of their offense. He went down. And then the backup went down, and they were to a guy that had only been in the organization for a week and some change. And Frank Clark had two pressures, one of which I heard the Pro Football Focus guys say he was credited with after having not been blocked. There was no attempt made to block him, and he got a pressure. Like, they slid the protection the other way, like thinking the ball will come out before he can get there.
Quicker, yeah, right.
Is Frank Clark hurt? Is Frank Clark, like, you know, what's going on? That was the day for Frank Clark to shine, and it didn't.
It's a weird thing because watching the game live and then rewatching it last night, he looks to be a better player right now against the run than what he's clearly paid to do, which is to go after the quarterback. So there were a couple times where he disrupted Nick Chubb trying to release out of the backfield that I thought was interesting, and there were a couple times where you could clearly tell my job is to set the edge, he ain't getting out here. And then obviously letting guys like Tyrann Mathieu or Anthony Hitchens to sort of fly down to make the tackle. So he's not a complete negative, but it is fascinating to know that, like, as the season's gone on, he's actually been a better run defender than he is as a pass rusher. I don't know how that will necessarily change next week with Josh Allen in the mix, just because I think he's more elusive than Baker Mayfield is. And again, he has better weapons, most notably Stephon Diggs. But I haven't heard any inklings of him really being hurt, Taryn, and usually around this time you would start to get that impression. That has not been told to me. And he had no issues going into the bye week or into, I guess, week 17 when they got their first break, even before going into the bye. And there was nothing that, you know, came out of yesterday's game that gave me any indication, I should say, that Frank Clark isn't 100%. But you know, for people who were thinking, hey, maybe he's saving it for the postseason, that wasn't the best performance when you needed somebody from the edge on third down. And there were more third and long situations than even I anticipated against the Cleveland Browns yesterday. And like you mentioned, two pressures. I mean, it's striking.
He's not going anywhere this season. They would be at a – let's see, where would it be? Next year he is 25.8 to keep, 37.9 to cut. But the following year, 26.3 to keep, 12.9 to cut. Post-June, you make that, let's call it 13, 6.5, 6.5 over a couple of years. I mean, that does look like where this is going, unless he has a really – next year is basically a contract year for Frank Clark.
He
can't really do anything. You know, we were having this discussion earlier, and somebody said, well, you know, I mean, unless he has a monster game in the Super Bowl. I mean, I had that conversation about Sammy Watkins as well, you know, earlier last hour. Even if he has a big Super Bowl, I mean, like, okay,
yeah,
that's
I
great.
Think, but yeah, but I think
you
that's,
can't. Yeah, that's coincidence no. more than it is like, well, he knows how to get healthy for the championship game. Well, what if we need him to get to the championship game? Like, come on. This is getting pretty demonstrative now, the kind of year that Frank Clark is having.
Yeah, and you also have to keep in context, I mean, what was the cap number over 2 years with Eric Berry, right? It was even more, I remember. Now, circumstances were obviously different just because Eric Berry was, you know, dealing with more injury history and was obviously, you know, towards the latter part of his career. But the team has had, you know, a willingness to say if it isn't great for us, we can move on even with a big dead cap number over the next 2 years. And in regards to Sammy, you know, there's hope that he could play against Buffalo, but I haven't heard anything definitively one way or the other, whether it's kind of trending
sort of toward that, or if he's going to kind of be what he was last week where he really didn't practice. But I think Sammy Watkins really isn't in the team's it would take, again, unforeseen circumstances changing for him to be back next year. And I think that's understood on both parties.
I actually can see a scenario where he's back. It's called a $1 million minimum veteran contract, because I don't know who's going to offer him anything more.
Yeah, I don't know who's going to offer him more, Sren. That's a really good point. But, I mean, when he's out there, he's productive. He just got to be out there. And that's the thing. Like, someone can outbid the Chiefs, though. And that's generally my take on it, moving towards.
Oh, I could see a team like Cleveland or Jacksonville saying, all right, let's take a flyer. He's a veteran, you know. But, I mean, he also isn't really – he's not your guy, like – well, let's let him come lead that room. Nah, the solar being thing, that's not – that mindset's not going to take over. You know, I think he gets a little bit of a bad rap on that, but no one's looking at it going like, this is the guy to lead a young group of wideouts.
Yeah, he's not a bad locker room guy. I want to –
No, he's not a bad locker room guy, but he's not getting paid to be the leader either.
Yeah, and here's my point. He's probably not Larry Fitzgerald. You know, where Larry Fitzgerald – built a third part of his career based on the fact that, like, he is a, like, you want to get better at this? Like, he is a model. You want to be consistent. You want to be obviously great for the community and for, you know, obviously the face of the franchise to some degree. Like, you know, Larry Fitzgerald is the guy that I immediately thought of when you mentioned that. And no, Sammy's not going to be that, but he's also not going to be, you know, a knucklehead either. It's just he's at another sort of myriadly complicated part of his career, because when he's played in the playoffs, at least in the Chiefs offense, he's been great. But they obviously had to kind of do a few things around him not being there to get guys like Byron Pringle and DeMarcus Robinson open on a few snaps. But I don't know. All I would say is I know there's teams out there that would be interested. It's just, again, what does the player want to do with his career, depending on who can offer him the most money?
I don't know. I mean, go look at some guys that were making $1 million. They're more productive than him, and they're making $1 million this year, right? With the cap being cut, I mean, I say this because I'm somewhat optimistic, and maybe that's it. Maybe I'm being too optimistic that no one's going to value him, and the Chiefs can get him on a one with, you know, $4 million extra in incentives that he probably won't reach, because he probably won't play. But I feel like it's time for them to, like, let's see. Greg, we hear all this about Greg Lewis, and I think he does a really good job as a coach.
He does, yeah.
Give him a young guy.
Yeah, some models.
The best young guy you can find and develop him.
Yeah. And we have to remember, too, that, like, you know, we've talked about this before, but, like, would we be surprised if the Chiefs drafted a wide receiver in the first round? Like, nah, we know Andy Reid and Brett Veach, okay? Like, you know, so – I mean, there's a number of ways for this to go. And again, just for people who are listening, like, I don't know if Sammy Watkins is going to play next week, where I would say there's a better chance that Clyde Edwards-Helaire plays against the Bills than right now, at least, Sammy Watkins, because I really haven't heard one way or the other how that's going
to
go.
Well, Sammy didn't even try to practice on Wednesday, right? Let me look and see if I've got it in my notes from the Zoom on Wednesday.
Yeah,
I know
Clyde
Edwards-Helaire tried on Wednesday.
Like, yeah, Clyde really tried, and then the team was like, you're a rookie. Like, let's just be super cautious. And, you know, Darrell Williams played well, and they knew that he was capable. Whereas for Sammy, it was a non-contact calf injury. Like, that is –
yeah. Fenton Gay Watkins, no practice last Wednesday. So Sammy Watkins didn't even try to practice. And I'm not saying he should have. If he's hurt, he's hurt.
Yeah,
but I'm
right.
saying, to your point about Clyde Edwards-Helaire, they were thinking he might have a shot, and he gave it a go on Wednesday. Then they shut him down the rest of the week and said, no, it's too early. And so they're giving him another week. So to your point, yeah, maybe you can get CEH out there. But Watkins isn't even giving it a shot at all this past week. And usually Reed likes you to practice a week, play, and then practice the second week.
Right, and here's what I would tell people about Reed's tendencies or his past history with guys injured. Thursday is kind of the most important day because it's the biggest chunk of what they're doing from an install of the actual game plan. So he would love to see you do this, do that. Okay, now I have an idea as to, like, how we want to shift the game plan moving forward. And then Friday is obviously situational football, red zone, third down, fourth down, things of that nature. So if you practice Thursday, or if you're a veteran and you practice Friday and Reed trusts you enough, this was the case with Eric Fisher, then you have a chance of playing. But Thursday and Friday are the critical days, in my opinion. And so that's what to keep a lookout for. If you don't see Sammy Watkins Wednesday, could he be limited Thursday? Could he be somewhat full go Friday, when you understand that Friday is a less of a workload day than Thursday?
We're talking to the Athletics' Nate Taylor here in the program. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to ask Nate if Eric Bieniemy needs to get a different job, not a head coaching job, right? If he doesn't get the head coaching job, does he need to take a there's one guy who did this, and it ended up paying him dividends as far as getting a head coaching job. We'll talk about that along with the Chiefs and Bills. We'll do it next with Nate Taylor from The Athletic. He's brought to you by Corona, Corona Light, Corona Premier, and, yes, the Corona Hard Seltzers, four different flavors, 0 grams of sugar, 0 grams of carbs. Look for it wherever you buy your Corona.
The program with Soren Petro.
It is said that he was born under the open sky, at the base of the glacier. That is not true.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We're talking to Nate Taylor from The Athletic. Nate brought to you by our friends at Corona, Corona Light, Corona Premier. Needed a couple extra, like I said, in the second half of the Corona Premier. That one was closer than it was supposed to be, the injury to Patrick Mahomes making it closer. We'll talk about the game against the Bills here in a second, but I want to get your thoughts about Eric Bieniemy. Marvin Lewis was in a similar situation to Eric Bieniemy. He had won a Super Bowl with the Baltimore Ravens as their defensive coordinator, and they won it because of his great defense, which, by the way, when you look back at it, clearly the scheme was a lot of it because what do they have, Curtis? Ray Lewis? And who else ended up going to the Hall of Fame from that defense?
Ed Reed.
Yeah, Ray Lewis and Ed Reed.
Yeah.
But Chris McAllister was a good corner, but he's not a Hall of Famer. You know, there were good guys on that defensive line. I don't think I'm missing any Hall of Famers up there either. So,
no.
You know, and he was not getting jobs. He then went for 1 year to Washington as the assistant head coach and defensive coordinator for Washington. And then he got the Bengals job. Does Eric Bieniemy need to leave Andy Reid's side and go get an OC job, and maybe even the assistant head coach title as well, but go get an OC job where he can call the plays? And because, I mean, I can buy that he doesn't interview well, because I don't think he did a great job with the media for 2 years. I think he's pretty good now. I think he handles us fine. You know, he doesn't get, you know, cornered. He like when he gives a non-answer, it's still a thoughtful answer, right? It's not just gibberish, which I thought he kind of did his first year, right? Like, you know, they hide these coaches so much that they don't have the interview skills when now they have to be made available as coordinators.
Yeah,
I think it's
right.
Good that the position coaches are made available once a month, so they're at least getting some practice at getting hit with questions and stuff like that. But, I mean, if he goes and he has play calling duties, there's nothing really – missing on his resume. That continues to be missing and will be missing as long as Andy Reid's here. Is that what Eric Bieniemy needs to do?
Yeah, I mean, he is somewhat he's given negative marks because he coaches Patrick Mahomes, which again is just wild to me. Because, you know, whether it's with Mahomes, Kelce, Hill, like those dudes going to the Hall of Fame if they track the way that they're tracking at this moment. It would be
Can I say this? I actually think that's you should get negative marks for that. The problem is no white coach has ever been given negative marks for that. Because anyone who ever touched Peyton Manning got jobs. Adam Gase continues to get jobs because he carried, you know, Peyton Manning's
Brady.
Foot Locker to training camp.
Right.
Yeah. All of Tom Brady's guys. Yeah.
But I'm glad it alluded to that, but like I mean I'm not gonna say it. But like
Matt Nagy, Doug Peterson.
It would be interesting. If he went, it would be interesting if he went somewhere else, had true play calling duties, and, oh, wouldn't you know it, they're a top 10 offense in the league despite not having the world's greatest quarterback. oh, maybe he has good leadership skills that would allow his team to be motivated or to be disciplined or to not make, you know, the same mistakes over and over again. Oh, he found a weakness in the opponent and then exploited it in a manner that was efficient and got points on the scoreboard. All these things are interesting to think about, but it shouldn't really take him leaving to go elsewhere to get a head coaching job. It mostly comes down to owners who are, for whatever reason, not comfortable with the fact that, like, if he doesn't call plays, if he's just under Andy Reid, if he's super uplifted by Patrick Mahomes, like, if they're not comfortable, then that's more on them and not the success and the duties that he is responsible in terms of Eric Bieniemy's side of this equation.
Here's a question I have. If he gets a head coaching job, he's probably going to hire an offensive coordinator who's going to call plays, isn't he? Why does he have to be a play caller? He's probably not going to do it the place he goes.
Well, that was a trend. That was a trend, Curtis, that, you know, has been floating out there for years, right? Before that, it was, well, you know, is he a good leader of men? And then another phrase was, well, does he come from a responsible tree? Or, who? There's this new guy who's doing crazy things in Los Angeles. He's named Sean McVay. Do you know Sean McVay? Like, the goalposts will continue to be moved no matter if you're a good coach or not. And that is unfortunate because it doesn't level who's actually doing a good job year over year consistently.
Yeah, it's disappointing. It doesn't look like he's going to get a job on this go-round again. And I'm just wondering if that, you know, that would at least eliminate one of the negatives that they've said about him if he did take an OC job someplace where he could definitely call the plays. Nate, great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. We will talk to you on the Central Bank of the Midwest pregame show this weekend, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Looking forward to it.
You bet. Nate Taylor, great job covering the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll take a break when we come back. Two-minute drill. It's next.
First end of the hour question, brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, what team has the record for wins in a four-year span without getting to a Super Bowl? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.